Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and here, as always, I'm joined by Clint McPherson. What's up, man?
Not much, brother. I'm just glad to be back finally to record another episode. I feel like I was sick for a couple of weeks. I had to not make it, and you've been riding solo, but I know you've had fun, and you've been keeping the momentum going for us. But let's go ahead and kick this thing off by welcoming our special guest today, Tyler Jeffcoat, to the show. How you doing, brother?
Man, I'm having a good morning, guys. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, we really appreciate you being on the show, Tyler. Before we get into everything, can you just tell our audience who you are and like kind of what you're all about?
Yeah. So Tyler Jeffcoat, my company is called Seller Accountant. We provide bookkeeping CFO services for scaling e-commerce companies. And I built and sold a healthcare company 3 years ago. So I'm kind of a guy trying to figure out entrepreneurship on a couple of different vectors.
Yeah, man. That is totally cool, man. So Tyler, can you take us back? I mean, and for me and Andrew, plus our listeners, man, but take us back to when your entrepreneurial journey actually started and what it is about entrepreneurship specifically that you're excited about, man.
Man, I there's two really important questions there. The way it started, I mean, I was the kid growing, I don't know if you guys were like this, but I was the kid growing up that always just organized my friends. I was kind of like a make stuff happen guy even, but I never would have called myself an entrepreneur. Like I think I've met some guys that were naturally hustlers to make money in like fourth grade. That wasn't really me. But getting out of college, I got into the corporate world and just felt like a square peg and around. I just never really fit. And so as I was finishing grad school, I had the opportunity to join a startup and I was like, oh, this is it, baby. This is exactly what I want to do with my life. Had no business being in the industry, but I just wanted the adventure of building something. And so, I mean, I think that kind of gets to your second question there, which is why am I passionate about it? Guys, I just believe wholeheartedly that whether you're an employee or a student or a business owner, this DNA of being a problem solver that listens to customers and generates value, kind of this entrepreneurial mindset, is just crucial. There's no facet of my life that won't be better if I can think like an owner and not just like an employee.
Oh, 100% agree. I think, yeah, even if you are an employee, if you think like an owner, first of all, you're going to understand how your, you know, the management and the owners of your business, the business that you work for, how they're thinking and, you know, how they're, you can also understand what they're looking for in their employees, right? So you're always, if you think like an owner, whether you're an owner or not, I think you're always going to have an advantage over people who just aren't thinking like that. And I think it also means that you have a level of commitment to what you're doing that's, you know, that's above and beyond. So I think that's critical.
Agreed. Yeah. And it's kind of the opposite of having to feel like a victim in any set of circumstances. I love the idea of, doesn't matter what's happening around me, I can say, wait a minute, there's something that could be done to solve this set of problems. And I can be in the driver's seat to do that. And so, you know, kind of like you alluded to there, Andrew, I don't have to be stroking my own paycheck for that to be true. I can adopt that mindset working for a Fortune 100 company and still be more successful because I view things that way.
Yeah. 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 You're not just throwing your hands up and saying, I can't, you know, I've hit this roadblock. What else you got? You know, it's like, no, we got to get through this roadblock. How are you going to do it? You might not solve every problem exactly. You're not going to solve every problem exactly the same. You're going to run into issues, but you're going to figure out. I think one of the things that you have to do as a business owner, especially, is you just have to get through things. It's just like, you know, you can't just get to, you know, have a problem and then just put it off or put it off on somebody else, especially as a small business owner. You got to tackle it yourself and figure out some interesting creative ways to solve that problem.
Yeah, definitely agree. Good point.
Cool. Well, so your clients, you help your clients detangle their finances with bookkeeping for e-commerce, for e-commerce sellers only. Why sellers only, and how are you able to get the most value to that group of customers?
So the best piece of advice I ever heard as I started the first business, which was a home healthcare business, was just this: there are riches in niches, right? And so if I can find as clear and clean a vertical, meaning a customer, a finite problem to solve, and then can approach that customer directly to ask them what they need, in other words, do some real customer discovery, and then build my entire brand, my entire model around being the best in the world at that one thing. I can't do everything well. So, you know, the genesis of the e-commerce niche for seller accountant was, frankly, guys, because I'm lazy. Like, right? I mean, I couldn't possibly be great at a bunch of different things. And, I guess the tad of my story also, I was a kind of an eBay seller guy in college, studied accounting. My MBA focus is finance. And after selling the other company, I was like, wow, I really want to get back to my finance roots here, but I need such a finite problem to solve that I can be great at it. And so that's kind of where we landed, and allows us to really offer superior value to the sellers. Cause my brother owns a appliance company. I don't do that accounting. My dad owns a real estate company. I don't do his accounting either. I just do the work for these sellers, and it allows us to be kind of top class, that kind of thing.
I love that approach, because when you start thinking about it, even in my industry, if you can niche down, man, that's the way to go. Because one, I mean, you can be the jack of all trades, right? And the master of none. And that really hinders growth, right? And so when you look at it that way, I really think niches, right? Like you said, the money's there in the niches. So if you could dig down and focus to where you're coming across something different from time to time, but almost to where you can like rinse and repeat, right? To where you're focusing. And that is where the strength comes in, because if you have one client in that niche, you can almost apply the same formula if you figured it out to the second client, right? And then going forward, and then you're basically not having to recreate the wheel or saying, okay, well, man, this guy for me is digital marketing, right? And what I'm doing from time to time is trying to have my hands in everything, right? Website development, mobile app development, you know, SEO, all this social media, and it just gets crazy. And if you can't just solely focus on one area like social media marketing or mobile app development, you're really hindering yourself. And I will self admit that that's what I've done, you know, for several years now. And when you look at it, man, if you could focus and just be that master, for me is social media, right? Or whatever it is that I choose to go after, like that's where it needs to be, whether it's chatbots for companies, whatever it is, it's like find that niche to where you can solidify and you can run away with it. And I love that approach, man.
Yeah, and the hardest thing to do, I mean, I don't know if you guys have found this, but as a startup, the most difficult thing to do is to say no to money, mm-hmm. right? If yeah, somebody will pay me money, today. Yeah, I'll shine your shoes, I'll mow
if it's
your lawn.
If it's green, we're taking it, right? Like as a startup, if it's green, we're going with it.
Yeah, sure, I do whatever. I do this, sure, I'll build your website. You know, I've never built a website, but I'll build it for you. But, exactly. And I think to the extent that we can practice the discipline to say, wait a minute, no. I only want to chase the right money. I want to chase the right money so that I can not always have to chase money. Because I think that's really, to your point, Clint, if I can build a process and a system and a team that can rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, my excellence level goes up. The other kind of benefit of being really niche-y is that you'll find that some of your perceived competitors become referral sources. So in other words, if I get really, really focused, one of our top referral sources is CPAs. I'm an accounting firm. They hate this kind of accounting. They don't want to do this. And so the fact that I don't do taxes, I'm not threatening their core business, they're very happy to send us the business, that kind of thing.
That's amazing. And that referral business is super powerful. I found that out of my product development consulting business, where I've reached out to manufacturers and IP attorneys who really, they're getting clients first. They're getting the people who should be coming to me first. They're getting them. And instead of spending a ton of money trying to get in front of them first and trying to convince them through Google Ads, Facebook, you know, whatever it is, it's proven to be much more efficient for me to just reach out to the people who have already talked to these people and who've already built trust. So that's amazing. If you can, I would definitely recommend that to anybody as a really powerful growth mechanism to go find the, you know, the comparative businesses in your industry who can refer business to you, because that's so your conversion rate's going to go through the roof.
And maybe to take it one step further, my very first phone call. So I've never even had a real accounting job. I mean, my degree's in accounting. I have an MBA, but like I'm a complete imposter in the accounting industry. Like I don't have, you know, and in some ways that's been a strength of ours because we didn't fall into some of the same things that have kind of driven this industry forever. But on day one, I didn't even have a name yet. I didn't even know we were going to call the company. But the first thing I did was call what I perceived to be the largest national competitor. And to his credit, the CEO talked to me for like an hour. I'm really grateful. And I just told him, I was like, "Hey, man, I'm getting into your space, and I don't know what I'm doing, but here's what I believe. Here's what I think is important. Here's what I think would add value to these customers. Is there anywhere where you're not quite where I am, but we're close enough that that's not a great customer for you, but might be a good customer for me?" And what you'll find a lot of times is with your established incumbents, they're a lot clearer than you are on what they want and what they don't want. And I found that within a couple of months, he was willing to send me referrals, you know? And so again, I just think it's a little bit of a partnership mindset. If I can adopt a mindset that says, you know, there's enough pie around that we can all make a living if we do things the right way, and view every relationship as being critical. Everyone's going to get my effort from a relationship management standpoint, because I just never know. I never know if this is the person that might turn the key. I'll give you a quick example. The first company that I built, the home healthcare venture, we really struggled. I mean, we spent a bunch of money in 2013, a bunch of money, six figures, lots of money, and had a total of $30,000 in revenue the entire year. You know, a lot of debt, like, oh God, should we quit this business? Should we still be in this business? In one relationship, and we've been pecking away at it for 7 months. And finally, all of a sudden, my business partner was at a horse show for his kid. And the lady we needed to talk to in the hospital was there with her kid. And bing, 5 days later, we had a meeting with the entire executive team and got a contract with the hospital to provide a service to them that allowed our business to go from me and four employees at the end of 2013 to me and 60 employees at the end of 2014. And so you just never know how like a kind of a tangential relationship could be extremely impactful for your business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of way that your business can change in a day. And it's not an overnight success, you know, can't be confused with that, you know, but it is amazing with that kind of marketing, just good old fashioned outreach and building relationships, which really costs you nothing but time. It's amazing what you can do and how quickly things can turn around. So I think that's such a cool strategy that especially, and you probably see it a lot, Tyler, especially because you deal with e-commerce brands. But there's a lot of focus around, all right, I've got this product. I need this funnel and I need everything, you know, I'm going to pump tens of thousands of dollars of ads into it and it's going to spit out money on the other end. And that's how it's done. That's how it has to be. And it's like, sure, that's definitely part of it. You know, there's, you know, you should work on that, but you shouldn't overlook these more old school manual type things that, hey, maybe start with something that's free and just, you know, put some elbow grease into it first. And then when you have some more capital, then dig into the ads and really test and figure out your funnel.
And Tyler, I love your approach or your outlook on, you know, the competition to a certain extent, right? Competition is competition. But at the end of the day, when you start looking at it, I've had this saying that I don't view my competition as something that's going to take money away from me. You know, I actively try to outreach to digital marketing agencies or marketing agencies in the area just to see how I can help, right? Just to see if I can be of assistance. Because again, just because they're the same area as me doesn't mean they're focusing on the same key thing that I am, right? And so how can I help you if I'm focused on in social media and you're not? Is there a way we can collaborate? And I think there's too many business owners or new business owners that come into the game and they're scared that you're going to take their pie, right? And it's like, I'm not even trying to take yours, dude. I'm just trying to get mine, right? And how can we help each other both succeed? And if I go to a networking event, I don't shy away from talking to somebody about possibly like teaming up, right? Because you'll have guys that are just out there to try to get business, but they're intimidated when they see another marketing dude there, and then they start kind of shy away. Like maybe I have this place in this group that, you know, they're just going to look for me. But it's like, no, dude, like I could leverage you. So don't, I would encourage anybody that's listening to this, don't be scared when you go to these things to try to ask how you can help, or if you can at all. And like you said, man, you'll start getting a ton of referral business. And I really think, don't be scared. Take that risk.
No, and in fact, if I go to a national conference, say for Amazon sellers or something like that, assuming it wasn't weird pandemic year, right? You know, most of my dinners would actually be with other fractional CFOs, which is one of the services we do, or other accounting firms. And the reason is exactly what you said. If you apply the 80-20 principle, the reality is 20% of my customers, I love them. And then I kind of like 80% of them. You know, I like most of them. But there's going to be some there that are close to a good fit, but are not a great fit for seller accountant. And it's arrogant of me to think that just because they're not a great fit for me doesn't mean they're going to not be a great fit for one of these other guys that's really close to my model, but they've got a different flavor. They're used to handling this particular kind of flavor, color of the problem better than I am. And I can maybe dump a headache and send a quality referral to somebody else. And so again, these partnerships are really meaningful. And, you know, it's really interesting because in the product selling world, Amazon in particular, Shopify similarly, it has created such a dog eat dog world. It really is like the jungle trying to fight for keyword real estate or trying to get product to move. And I still, this is just kind of me from a core value standpoint, I still believe that if you take the time to discover what your customers want and you deliver a superior experience for the customer, you're going to win, and you don't really have to be a jerk about it. It doesn't mean I'm a hard competitor. I hate losing. Like when we go in this strategically, like if it has to be me or you, I'm going to try to win. Like if it's, you know, in a fight, right? But normally my best focus, and I think this is what even made guys like Steve Jobs or even Jeff Bezos so brilliant, is that their obsession is not about their competitor. Their obsession is about the customer. I make my obsession understanding what the customer needs, how to make her life better, how to make his life better. And I engineer everything around that and then just become as partner friendly with everybody as I can. Most of the time I'm going to have the opportunity to win if I can execute.
Yeah, that's a good point. Customers, if you can put the customer first, which you had two great examples there. I mean, I think Steve Jobs definitely put the customer first. I think Jeff Bezos, even more so maybe, you know, like they make it so, so easy for a customer to do business with Amazon, to buy from Amazon. It's just so every little thing, like they keep adding stuff too, like just being able to drop, like if you have a return, you just drop it off at UPS, they scan a code, you don't even have to put it in a box. I mean, I would never have even thought about that, right? So if you can do all those things, now you have to make sure it works for your bottom line and that you're not kind of screwing yourself over in the long run by accommodating every little desire of the customer. But I mean, I think, yeah, if you're providing that value, at the end of the day, you'll win, you know, and the customers will see that too. They'll see who's taking care of them and who's not.
Hands down. So Tyler, man, you have a saying, which I love: sales are vanity, profit is sanity. You know, what are the things you typically do without having to change a company's business model that uncovers more profit, man?
Yeah. So I think the first step is to gain visibility. You kind of think about it like trying to drive a Jeep with mud on the windshield. It's suicide. You couldn't do a good job. And so I think step one is to create a little bit of order. That's when you think about good kind of investor grade bookkeeping, what you really mean, and this is in the industry, not just my niche, it's can we line up our sales and our expenses in a vertical column for 1 month so that when we look at that month, we can say, oh, we made money. And when I look at that number and it says I made money, I believe it. Because here's what happens as entrepreneurs is if there's noise in our accounting, we're going to tend to ignore the yellow flags or red flag and say, well, that was just, I didn't really lose money last month. I'm a victim of bad accounting. And so we're going to ignore things. And so having a financial system that gives you bad news several times a year where you course correct instead of driving into the ditch is critical. And so I think that visibility is key. Once you have clear visibility, the things that drive profitability are, it's pretty simple. Sales volume, sales differentiation. What that means is if my product is really, really awesome, I can charge a higher premium above what I paid for it. Sometimes we can overcomplicate things, right? If my product's cool, I get to charge more for it. And I either have a competitive advantage because I'm great at securing product, I'm a really good buyer, or and increasingly so, this is important, I have a competitive advantage because my offering is more compelling to my audience. And part of it's construction quality, part of it might be features, but the marketing is so critical also. I mean, think about how important, and say like an Amazon business, it is the trust. It's just trust. I know that when I click buy Tyler's product, whatever it is, that it's going to, I don't have any anxiety because my problem is solved because it has enough five-star reviews or this, that, and the other. And so we talk about finding profitability, you know, just looking down your P&L. What's out of whack? Am I spending 50% of my budget on advertising? That could be good. Like for instance, if you're selling a consumable and you're acquiring a customer that's going to buy it from you every month for the next 3 years, spending 50% of your budget on advertising could be a great strategy. But for most product sellers out there, if they're spending 50% of their budget on ads, they're in trouble because there's fees related to logistics and everything else. And it may be that they're not talking the right language to the right customer, or they have a crappy product. Who knows what it is, right? But that's the kind of stuff we dig into, is to say, and then I think the thing that helps us give perspective to our clients is we've just gathered so much data now that we can kind of think, okay, if this is your business model, if you're a private label seller of a durable product, here's roughly what your profitability should be. And if you're not close to it, we can look at each line within your financials and say, oh, this might be the fact that you have $20,000 a month in salaries. That might be a problem. Let's take a look at that. And yeah, I think that's kind of how we approach it.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Our guest last week, I was talking to him about he's sold some products online and on Amazon. And one of the things, like he had a friend that came to him and said, hey man, I did $1 million in sales last year. You know, that's amazing. And he didn't, you know, this guy didn't even skip a beat. He said, cool, how much did you make? And he took home $30,000 from that. Mm. And it's like, that's terrible. You know, you don't want to make a million, you don't want to need to have $1 million in revenue coming in order to only take home $30,000. So something's very, very broken there. You know, it's like you can always lower your, it's easy to sell something when it's cheap and you're just lowering the cost of it all day long. Or, it's easier to sell something when you're just, you know, throwing ads at it all day long, not paying attention to what the ROI is. So I think that's a great way to look at it. You know, there's so many vanity metrics out there. And a lot of, you know, we think about like likes on social media and comments and all that stuff is they're sort of like the vanity metrics that a lot of people get caught up in, but sales,
that's not likely the metric that's bringing in the money though, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, profit. That's really it. Let's get down to what's the profit at the end of the day. And if that's healthy, then you're running a good business. And if not, then you got to rethink things.
Well, and part of it is that profit magnifies, scale magnifies whatever you're doing in your business. This is what I was trying to say. We have a lot of clients who are trying to raise cash, venture capital, private equity, banks, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And if you have a bad model, your products aren't fundamentally sustainable, don't have enough ROI in them, then just putting the fuel of more cash in that business is going to magnify the problem, not solve it. And, mm-hmm. and then the inverse of that is what I was trying to say a minute ago, is that profit solves a ton of problems. If I have great margins in products, I don't have to be as worried about how many percentage points I spend on advertising. I can be more aggressive in recruiting great teammates. I have a lot of leverage to build a relationship with my customers long-term if I've developed a good enough product and I have margin in that product. And so I tend to be kind of a margin Nazi, right? You've got to be really, really focused, whatever it is, it could be a service, it could be accounting. You're going to do an accounting service. I've got to be able to present a service to you guys that I can do at a consistently a high enough margin that you can trust me to be a around a year from now. And so I think it's, I think sometimes some entrepreneurs, especially even myself in my first venture, I felt like I had to apologize for making money in my business. And honestly, sane customers want you to make a profit. They need you to, because they want you to be around next year.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. If you're selling, so you don't, you know, there's, they need you to be around, because if they have another problem that, that they need a solution for, that you have an answer for. I mean, you know, they're hoping that you're going to be around for, you know, so they can buy more products from you. They can continue to refer people, but not only that, but if they have any issues, they want you to be around, right? They don't want to just buy something and then they bought it so cheaply that it can't, you know, that business can't sustain. I've seen that in the service industry. And it happens all the time, I'm sure. So yeah, I think that's really critical. So Tyler, from a business perspective, you have an info product and a consulting service. So we're going to kind of switch gears a little bit from talking about the, you know, the accounting of what you do for other businesses, but really what you do this is about what you do for your business. So having the info product and the consulting service, that offers the best of both worlds to your clients. But what have your experiences been scaling the product versus the service, and what kind of outreach are you doing besides podcasts to build awareness for your business? We talked a little bit about that outreach, but you know, what's kind of the difference in how you approach each one, the product versus service?
It's a really, really good question. I mean, we developed the do-it-yourself courses. That's the product, these pay $400, pay $500 and learn how to do your own bookkeeping kind of courses. And we did it for two reasons. One is that we were not very effective at marketing to our core audience, which is kind of this $500,000 to $5 million a year Amazon or Shopify seller. We weren't very good at talking to that audience without catching the entire 3 million sellers that could fall under that umbrella. They kind of, a lot of those guys go to the same conferences and they all need help. We just don't have the capacity as a service professional firm to help everybody. And some of them are so small that, to be honest with you, I would really be a bad CFO if I'm like, hey, I know what you should do as a brand new seller. Let's spend like a quarter of your budget this month on accounting service. That's not a great thing to do. And so I think for us, we built the product to solve two problems. One, we couldn't help everybody, but we wanted to. And two, we wanted to try to create a negative cost of acquisition for a customer. This is the only, I don't want to make money on products. That's not my business model. But if I can use my ad dollars to drive traffic to my product, self-service, it builds the relationship. Our product comes with a, you know, anytime you want to, you can turn in this value for store credit, so to speak, and we'll apply it against your first bill at seller accountant. So our thought was, if we could get people to start viewing e-commerce finance the way we view it and basically spend all of our ad dollars breaking even on that product, then we're going to have a funnel of leads in the long term that are not going to cost us any more money. So I think that's kind of if you're thinking about strategically what a seller accountant doing, it's those two things. You know, the honest confession from my standpoint is, maybe I need to talk to you guys about digital marketing, but we have not been terribly effective at the digital marketing part of this. Our core marketing strategy from day one has been, you know, kind of an expert persona. Tyler has M&A experience. Tyler sold another business. Let's get on podcast. I spoke on another national conference yesterday. Let's talk to people about what's happening in this world. And hopefully a few of them will say, oh, that's cool, let's reach out to them. And it's worked for us, but it's not a very scalable model. And so if I'm completely honest with you, I do not think we're very effective at digital marketing. We use some Facebook ads. We've had some limited success. We've tried some evergreen webinars that have had also some limited success. But I would say that's my weakness, okay, and fascinating to me. It's something I'd like to learn more about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, digital marketing is, yeah, as Clint, you know, firsthand too, you know, it's tough. So that's something that you would want to maybe focus on in the future? And would you be interested in kind of at some point figuring out like an info product, maybe a series of info products or a course that you could, because some people kind of want to be more hands off, you know, they might offer a one-on-one service, you know, for a while, but then ultimately their goal might be to kind of back off a little bit on that, or at least still have that, maintain that, but really scale up the info part, because that's more, that might be more scalable. Is that something that you're interested in, or are you just really focused in for the long run on one-to-one, you know, helping people out with their accounting?
It's a great question. I think the way I would answer it, and this is something I would encourage all of us to think about, is I've been on this quest to clarify my vision. So the real question you're asking me is, Tyler, what do you want? What do you want out of this? And so this exercise that I've been going through with some guys and a couple of masterminds, one that I lead, one that I'm a member of, is what do I want my life to look like in 2023? How is it going to look like to be Tyler Jeffcoat, husband, father, business owner at the end of 2023? And to the extent that I can clarify my vision, it's even funny. I think I saw a recent episode where your speaker was talking about the difference between being a leader and a manager. If I'm not mistaken, that concept kind of comes out of Malcolm Hyatt's book, The Vision-Driven Leader, which is what we've been studying in My Group Bosses. I would really resonate with that podcast. You guys should go back and listen to it. But this idea of getting above the clouds, looking into the future. And so now to get more concrete, for seller accountant, it's all about impact for me. We're going to make a great living if we have impact on people. And so for us, it's how can we have 500 transformational relationships by the end of 2023. And for us, that's going to look like we don't do any, a lot of our accounting partners in the space, competitors, will kind of build an Asian team for their offshore data entry. We've chosen to go with we happen to be right down the street from the University of Georgia, which was one of the top accounting schools in the world. We're like, hey, why don't we bring these guys in and build our model around developing the next generation of leaders? And so what gets me fired up is the possibility of saying, okay, what we're going to do here, entrepreneur, is you hire seller accountant, and it's going to create a transformational industry-leading accounting experience for you. If you want the fractional CFO, that's going to be industry-leading also. But what's even better about it is that you're going to be on the ground floor of imputing critical entrepreneurial DNA to the next generation of leaders that, yeah, they made a 1500 on their SAT 3 years ago. Yeah, they're going to make $100,000 when they graduate college in a year and a half. What they're missing is the DNA that we talked about at the very beginning of this podcast, that entrepreneurial mindset. How do I think bigger than just a spreadsheet, right? And so we've created a masterminding system to develop the leadership skills of these students. And so to answer your question, whatever it looks like to reach transformational relationships to the tune of 500 by the end of 2023 is going to drive my business strategy from here until that moment. I think in terms of products versus services, there is potential scalability on both sides, because it can't just be me. There's 13 on my team right now. I do zero bookkeeping right now. So we've got a team that can do it. But the product, we've recorded the two courses that are sitting in a platform called Teachable that are self-service. You get in there, you put your credit card in, you take the courses. Those are obviously infinitely scalable because it's an information product that's already been, the work has been done to capture that information. And I would be very happy if we could get better at selling more of those, because it gives us the impact at a kind of a broader range.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like you said, it can funnel business back into your service business. So, yeah, but you're right. That is, it's a tough question. It is a very introspective question. I play that game all the time. What do I want from, 2021 and, besides no COVID, but other than that, it's like, how do I scale my business? How do I offer more value without just saying, like, I want to be involved and I want to help people on a one-to-one basis, but there's only one of me. It's sometimes very difficult to scale a service business, because you got to get the right people. But that's tough. But it really is a matter of like, what do you want for the future? Not just this year, not just next year, but what do you want for the next 3 to 5 to 10 years? And I think you're right. I think that really helps drive that decision.
It does. It helps with the drive, the push, and it gives you a clear focus on what you're striving to do. It gives you a way to like put blinders on, but still observe at the same time and focus on something, and like, hey, this is what I want to do. This is the goal. This is where I want to strive for. And it helps us not become complacent. Right? Because when you're sitting there as a business owner and everything's hunky-dory, or you figured it out, or you shifted or whatever it is, man, it just, again, that complacency can set in, and then next thing you know, that vision is lost because you're fine with everything going on, but you're not even looking for the future. You know, you're just doing the day-to-day operations and not even thinking about what's going to happen in 2023. It's like, who cares about 2023? I'm trying to survive today. But like, if you can't look that far, if you can't have something written down or something in a mastermind that you're striving to do with your business, I mean, you're really looking short term and you're not setting yourself up for success or the people around you either.
Exactly. You got to get out of the weeds.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I can get kind of trapped in, and I don't know if other people can empathize with this, but it can be easy to be really incremental in our goals because it's like, I can really see a safe bridge from where I am now to this next thing. And unless we change our mindset to start viewing things in more of an exponential, I'm not saying if I'm doing, you know, $500,000 in revenue, I got to do 50 million. I'm not saying that it needs to be reasonable, but it needs to be stretchy enough over a few years of timeline that it forces us to build a system of business and not a personality business. And so I think that's been really, just to be transparent with you guys, that's kind of been my big mind shift quest in the mastermind that I lead for 7 and 8 figure Amazon sellers and the ones that I'm a member of is, okay, how can I expand my vision just enough that it scares the hell out of me and forces me over the next 3 or 4 quarters to execute obsessively over building the systems, recruiting the people, doing the things I need to do, where it's like, well, what would it take for Seller Account to be able to acquire 50 customers a month? I don't know. That sounds outrageous. But I wonder what it would look like to build the infrastructure that would allow us to do that. And I think giving yourself permission, especially if you tend to be the kind of entrepreneur that's kind of in the weeds, you're kind of an implementer by nature, to say, wait a minute, I need to go get a half day in the woods, grab a journal, turn the cell phone off, and just ask that question, why? Why am I doing this? And if your business is not giving you, as Chuck Blakeman says, and making money is killing your business, if it's not giving you time, money, and significance, then there's something broken. And your job as the entrepreneur is to sit there and figure out what needs to change. I've known some guys, I was talking to somebody last night about this. I have a friend in Atlanta, the guy's got to be worth $50 million. Miserable, lots of money. Top of the mountain, he's done it. Estranged from his family. And so I think just understanding again, what do I want? And how does my business as its own entity fit into my ecosystem and serving the people that are most important to me, that kind of thing.
That's it. Yeah. Because some people do want to spend more time in their business. You know, they might want to do, like, I know a lot of engineers who want to be an engineer. And for me, as much as I like engineering, I'm more interested in, you know, the business part of things and growing. So yeah, I think like for everybody, it's a little different. You know, somebody might be happy with, you know, making $100,000 a year, making $50,000 a year. And if, like, you know, maybe for that, you're fine with that take home. And like, let's say you're fine with, you know, $40,000-$50,000 a year and you don't have to work that much, you know, and you're good with it and it pays the bills and you're happy. I mean, that's more power to you, but yeah, you just have to figure out what makes the most sense for you.
I think it's kind of the beauty of e-commerce, honestly, is I have guys that I have a guy that owned a really successful mortgage company, hated it. It was burnt out. The guy wears flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt now and has a, you know, $2 million a year business that is steady and he makes great money. He's done a good job of building a set of systems. He's selected good products. He takes great care of his customers. And as a result, he has been able to build his business around his lifestyle. For every one of those, I've got another guy that's, you know, in 4 years going to go from 0 to $30 million in revenue. And so it just, your tactics can't be clear until your vision is clear. And there's no wrong answer. I think this is what you're saying there, Andrew. It's okay to have a small business. It's okay to be a solopreneur, but do that with excellence. It's also okay to want to scale, but you're going to have to do some different things. You're going to have to do them with excellence also. And so that's the key. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So Tyler, man, through your entrepreneur journey, we all experience, I know me and Andrew have our highs and lows during the process, and that won't change as long as you stay an entrepreneur, right? I mean, and that's just life in itself. But what has been the most difficult thing for you about being an entrepreneur?
It's not even close. The most difficult thing was the partnership challenge that I had in the first business I built. Great guy. It's not a, no attack on him. We had a good run together, 0 to 120 employees in about 4 years. And I was a coward early on about some things that were bugging me that I didn't bring to the forefront early enough. I was naive as a 29-year-old and didn't have an attorney review the contract. And so the combination of those two things really just created kind of a slow, simmering kind of animosity between the two of us that didn't really need to be there. We were great friends. He's still a great guy. But at the end of the day, you know, I ended up exiting and I'm grateful. I've got to make a little bit of money. I think he just sold the business recently. He did well also. But in terms of just the gut-wrenching heartache of seeing this thing, we literally started with a focus group of our core customers. They named the business. They helped us build the concept, customer discovery to the extreme. We ended up being a pretty strong market leader in the North Georgia area. And all of us, and honestly, I realized that my identity was too tied up with the business. I was too the same guy as the company. And so when it disappeared, it really was depressing. It was about 3 months where I was like, wow, this is the worst. And I think the thing that I'm grateful for, and I just want to say this in hindsight, I never would have ended it when I ended it if things hadn't been kind of weird between me and the business partner. And man, I'm so glad I did, because I'm in a much better business now. And I've had the ability to learn from the mistakes I made the first time and build a much healthier company. And so it's kind of, you know, again, we're probably too optimistic as entrepreneurs, but it's only failure if you don't get up. Only failure if you don't learn from it. And man, I screwed some things up. I mean, think about this. I'm an accountant. I worked at a bank for 5 years as a manager, my finance focused MBA. And then I run a business and I like crash the cash flow, you know, like we had 180 grand in accounts receivable. I didn't know how to collect it. So it's just like the things that you would think that as somebody who should be quote unquote a financial expert, it doesn't matter until you're the one that feels the pain of being like, oh God, am I going to make payroll this Friday?
Oh, yeah.
Can we please have another check come in so we don't crash and burn this week? And, and so I'm just grateful for the experience, but man, was it hard.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I mean, I know it's not an awesome experience, but awesome that you can look back and again, pick yourself up from that and move forward.
Yep. Yep. And it can be tough to work with friends too. That's, you know, that can be difficult. And you know, you've got to make sure that expectations are a big part of that, right? Like you can have all the agreements and contracts that you want, which are very important to have those, but the expectations are important, and you really have to make sure that you're all on the same page. Cause you know, at the end of the day, you want to remain friends with them, but you also want to run a successful business. And sometimes just parting ways is a great thing. I have another business, product-based business, that we originally had three guys and now we're down to two, and it's better for all of us. So, I mean, it just works out better that way sometimes.
Agreed. Yeah, I think I made the comment earlier in our conversation about, you know, scale doesn't solve problems, it magnifies problems. And I think that was my false mindset in the first business was once we reach 150 employees, once we reach this many millions of dollars in revenue, then these kind of underlying issues will be, there'll be so much money, who could complain? It'll be perfect. We'll never have any issues again. And I think in hindsight, that was foolish. I think it was just me failing. I described the like mud. I was unwilling myself to really clearly see where things were and address the problems because I was afraid. I was afraid I was going to lose stuff. I was afraid that I was going to damage relationships. And what ended up happening, to be honest with you, is that my cowardice damaged relationships. And so I think that's been my big takeaway is people matter and conflict is healthy. And be willing to have hard conversations as early as possible so that you can stay on the same page if it's possible or split early while it isn't acrimonious, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So Tyler, as we wrap up this episode, I mean, I think we could sit here and talk to you for a while here, but all good things must come to an end. So if you can leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would that be?
I've talked about vision and I've talked about being not afraid of conflict. And I've talked about making sure that your business gives you time, money, and significance. I would say and I'm only 37. I just turned 37 this week. Every year that I get older, that third one, significance has more meaning to me. So if I can encourage you of anything, maybe to kind of collide those things into one principle, it'd be grab a vision that includes impact on people's lives and impact on your family and impact on yourself. And if you grab a vision that scares the hell out of you a little bit, but has an impact on people and impact on lives, the money will follow if you execute, but it's got to be a clear vision. So I would say, if I can leave you with that, that'd be the thing I'd leave you with.
That's perfect. I think it's a perfect way to wrap up this episode, man. And I really appreciate your time. And from the both of us, Tyler, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to helping us add value in what we're trying to do on our podcast, brother.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler. Guys, thank you so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Tyler is working on, check out selleraccountant.com. If you like what you heard today, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or any other major podcast directory. You can also find us on all the socials and on our website at thatentrepreneurlife.com.
And with that said, we also want to quickly give a special shout out to our family and friends, like always, to include all our listeners, followers, and subscribers. Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.